Welcome to episode number 16 of the First Responder Wellness Podcast, the show where we talk about wellness, mental health, and leadership, and what it takes to have a wellness culture within your organization. My name is Conrad Weaver. I'm a filmmaker and podcast host and the director of the award-winning film PTSD 911, and I'm so glad you decided to join us today. Today on the show, I have a conversation with Kenny Schroeder. Kenny is a firefighter and paramedic down in Kentucky, and he's a part of a regional peer support network. We talk about what it takes to have a healthy career as a firefighter and what it means to win as a first responder. You know, sports teams spend a lot of money on their athletes to help keep them healthy and strong and to help them be able to win. But what does that mean for your agency? So what is your agency doing to help you be able to perform at your very best? Are the life choices you're making enabling you to achieve the win? These are some of the topics we discussed today on the podcast, so stay tuned. Hey, I really appreciate you listening to the show, and there are a lot of great podcasts out there, and so I appreciate you listening to this one. If you could do me a small favor, please take a minute to write a review and leave a rating on Apple Podcasts. We want to be able to reach more first responders, and leaving a review helps us do that. And if you're watching on YouTube, be sure to hit subscribe and the little notification bell so that you know every time we upload a new video. Thanks again for doing that. And also be sure to share the podcast, whether it's on Apple Podcasts or on YouTube, be sure to share it with your network. Thank you so much for that. And thanks again for listening. And now here's my conversation with Kenny Schroeder. Well, Kenny, welcome to the First Responder Wellness Podcast. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Good morning, Conrad. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about who you are and what do you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So like I said, my name is Kenny Schroeder. I am a firefighter paramedic. I spent most of my career in the town that I live in Independence, Kentucky. Started as a volunteer and just worked up through the ranks to eventually becoming a lieutenant. I was very connected to health and wellness my whole career, not knowing how much I would really need it when the time came. So I retired last year and took like 60 days off and got right back into the first responder world, now as a firefighter paramedic, but just with a different organization. So also involved, like I said, health and wellness. So peer support, pet therapy. We have a what's called a FACE team, which is firefighters attacking the cancer epidemic in the area. So just being a part of that.
Yeah, I want to get more into your journey for health and wellness. So you said you were part of that your whole career, but I want to first go back to, you know, what got you motivated, interested to becoming a firefighter?
Yeah, so I was never one that envisioned being a firefighter as a kid. Like, I didn't dress up for Halloween as a firefighter. You know, I didn't do any of that. It was like my eyes were set on being a race car driver. And I'm like, all right, you know, that's what I'm going to be. That's always what I wanted to be. So as I progressed in age, it was like, well, that's, you know, probably not very realistic. I have to have a backup plan. So my backup
That's something I've always wanted to do as well. So I wanted to race cars.
Yeah.
In fact, I told my wife recently, I said, hey, if you ever want to give me a great birthday present, take me to the Indy 500 and let me drive one of those cars around the track, you know?
Yeah. So funny story. I actually did that.
Really?
Later in life. So, you know, this is probably, I think it might have been for like my 30th birthday or something like that, that my wife got it for me to go to the Kentucky Speedway and drive one of the Richard Petty experience cars. And nice. I thought it was cool. Like, it was pretty awesome. But as I started doing it, you know, I feel like I'm going fast. And I think my top speed was like 80 miles an hour. So truly not meant to go super fast in a race car. So, you know, it all works out for a reason.
And probably maybe because you've seen some stuff, you know, along the way.
Yeah,
right?
That's absolutely accurate. Yes. Yes. I know the dangers of going fast and they don't usually end well.
Sure. Exactly. Yeah. Although the race cars are built to kind of take some of those impacts a little better than our consumer cars. So
they are. They are. Yeah.
But
yep, for sure.
So yeah. So you chose the firefighting career. So tell me about that.
So I feel like the firefighter career kind of chose me. Like I just kind of followed this path of, it was in my senior year of high school. We had to do a service project just as part of that senior year. And instead of doing things like everybody else was doing, which was going to like the food pantry and helping out there, helping the homeless, I wanted to go learn how to do CPR. So I went to my own community fire department, Independence, and I said, teach me how to do CPR. And they're like, okay. And it was the moment I set a foot in that door that I was like, man, this feels like family. This feels like home to me. And from that point on, I was in it, and it was in my blood. And so I learned how to do CPR. Shortly after that, we didn't have like a cadet program or a junior firefighter program there. It was just, you know, once you were 18, you could be a volunteer. So as soon as I hit that mark, my 18th birthday, I signed up to be a volunteer. I went to EMT class the next year as part of college. And at the same time, I was also going for an education on being a mechanical engineer because I just loved like the hands-on science stuff. So doing both at the same time, and I actually met my wife in EMT class too, which is a whole nother story. but doing both at the same time, we ended up getting married in September of 2001, September 8th, 2001, to be exact. I had graduated college as a mechanical engineer, went to work for Procter & Gamble full time, and still being a volunteer on the side. So we were on a honeymoon during 9/11. And that was just where like my life took a shift. I was working a great job. Like I loved doing what I did at Procter & Gamble, but I just couldn't fathom the idea of having this other skill set of saving lives and there potentially being a need in my own hometown. So I had the opportunity to test for a full-time position at Independence, and I took that test and made that transition from Procter & Gamble to a full-time career in firefighting. And so I did that. Along the ways, I became a paramedic. So I've been a paramedic for 17 years now. And that was something like I couldn't stand, like needles, couldn't stand the sight of blood. So to do something like that, it was way outside of my usual area of expertise. But come to find out, it's like I can't stand the sight of my own blood, or I can't stand needles coming at me. If it's somebody else, not a problem. So did that. Again, I was very connected to health and wellness. So anything I could bring to my own department as far as nutrition, fitness, definitely peer support.
Was that unusual back then in that time?
It was. It was so about 2009 is when I really got immersed into the fitness side of things for my department specifically. They sent us to Dallas, Texas, to the Cooper Institute to learn to become a peer fitness specialist. So brought that back. And it was after that, it was like game on, like, this is what we're doing here. And, you know, not stopping. I can see the need. I know it's out there and I know we need to do better. But that like the stigma is still there today. Like there's still, you know, those in the industry that are like, we don't need this. We don't want this. But that's slowly that culture and stigma is starting to change, which is a good thing.
Did that initiative come from leadership within your department?
It did. Yes, it did. At the time, it was a previous chief than what we had now. But he saw the need. Like he didn't understand, I don't think, like exactly where that need fit, but he saw a need for it, you know, that we need to maintain our health to be able to do this job and also to protect our community better. Like if you look at it from that lens of, oh, if we take care of our people and we make sure they're, you know, good, then they're going to take care of the community even better. So he saw that.
Well, that is something that is really lacking in a lot of agencies today. Just that vision for that.
Right.
You know, why do you think that is such a rare thing?
Because it's kind of a business, I think. And, you know, chiefs and administrators have a lot on their plate to look at. And, you know, not only is it making sure we have the apparatus, making sure we have the people, you know, making sure that everything is aligned the way it's supposed to. I just don't think it's on everybody's radar that, hey, we really have to take care of our people, you know, as well. It's sometimes it's just treated as a number or a product or, you know, whatever it may be. So I just don't think it's on a lot of radars yet. And that's the one thing we're working hard to try to change and shift is like, hey, this needs to be on your radar. So,
you know, I think just from my outsider perspective, you know, looking at a sports team, for example, you know, I mean, Cincinnati Bengals, they're, you know, if you like them or hate them, they're really committed to having healthy athletes on the field because they want to win. Right. So they are going to spend money to keep their athletes healthy. They're going to buy them the best equipment to train, and they're going to hire the best coaches to instill, you know, healthy lifestyles. They're going to buy help with, they're going to get nutritionists to come in and do everything to get these athletes in the best shape they can so they can win. And I think sometimes that perspective of winning is perhaps not what first responder leaders think about. But to your point, you guys saw your chief saw the need to have healthy first responders so that you can serve your community better. That's a win, right? What needs to happen to have that mind shift of a winning mind shift within agencies?
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up because I struggled with that for a while about this whole thing of winning. You know, what does a win look like? Because that is our mindset every day at work. Like we don't like to lose because when we lose, lives are affected. Lives are either lost or somebody loses their property or something like that. So we have this mentality of we want to win every day, every time we go out the door. So we do that shift is occurring where we look at ourselves as kind of tactical athletes to where we have to be in the best shape possible. But again, it comes down to budgets. It comes down to, you know, first responders just aren't paid well. There's just not a lot of money out there. You really have to be laser focused on what your dollars go to. And a lot of times health and wellness is not one of them as much as it should be, as much as we think it should be. It's just not, you know, a very big budget item. And so
do you think it's something that needs to be addressed with like the community leaders, the people who, you know, set the budgets, the bean counters in your community, that they need to understand this, that, hey, this is important. We need healthy first responders and we need the budget to do that.
Yes, absolutely. One of the things that Independence did, this was not, you know, it was very out of the norm when they introduced it, maybe about 5 years ago, they actually did a Citizens Academy. So Citizens Fire Academy, where just citizens of the district and surrounding community could come and learn about what we do. And it was eye-opening for those people that went through it. My mom and dad went through it and they're like, we had no idea. Like all of this stuff was involved in what you do. And yeah, it's like, we don't just sit in recliners and wait for calls. Like there's a lot that happens in between, you know, whenever your shift starts. For us, it was 7 a.m. to 7 a.m. You know, there's a lot that happens in that time period, and we have to be prepared and ready to go at a moment's notice. And that preparation, it really is a lot, you know, when you're not aware of that. So I think just educating the public, educating if you work for a city, like making sure your city mayor and just all the commission members are on board with what you do and are aware of what you do. Like that's the key, is just that awareness. As well as educating the general public.
What did that kind of a mentality within your department, what did that do for you guys and gals, I'm assuming? What did that do for you as far as the stuff that you experience day to day?
The mentality of just like the runs and incidents and things that occur?
Yeah.
So it takes a toll. Like seeing the things that we see, I know that the average population may see one or two traumatic events in a lifetime. And for us, that's like every shift, you know, we'll see one or two traumatic events in a shift, but that's what we do. That's what we signed up for. We knew that going in. I think that we didn't realize how much of a toll that takes. Like it's just a lot to have to put on your shoulders and carry throughout your career if you're not aware of that toll that it takes, and in very positive ways to, you know, help yourself and care for yourself. We a lot of times turn to things that aren't so helpful, you know, in ways to just what we think is taking care of ourselves just by taking on additional roles or additional jobs or stuffing it all in or turning to other substances to help us through those times, not getting enough sleep, whatever it may be. There's just a lot of unhealthy things that we do that don't really help ourselves in the long run. So the awareness, again, is the key with that, and it's something that I just wasn't aware of. Even though I was surrounded by it, you know, I was working on it just through the health and wellness piece for the fire department. You know, I myself wasn't aware when I really needed it. So,
What did you do when you kind of became aware of that and the struggles that maybe you looked at yourself in a different way? What did you do to kind of help yourself get better or to attack those things?
Yeah, so it was stuff again, like I was connected to it. So I had these things in place of, you know, making sure I exercised, and I did. Like our shift was really good about exercising every shift, trying to eat healthy. So those things I was aware of. The piece I wasn't aware of was just the toll it was taking on my mental health in particular. Mm-hmm. So I thought, just like everybody else, like the culture that is out there of suck it up, like, we're first responders. This stuff doesn't affect us. We have to make it look like it doesn't affect us. You know, even though we're crying inside or it's tearing us apart or whatever it may be, like I had that same mindset of like, I got to be strong. This is who I am. I can't let it affect me. And there is a point, like, I don't want to downplay that. Like there is a point during an incident where you have to be that way. Like we have to show up and we have to take care of the job. And, you know, if we're crying, well, you know, somebody's in a car wreck or whatever the case may be, that's not going to go well. So we have to have that as part of us, like the training that we do, the fight or flight response, the way that we're wired, like that's necessary. But the thing that I didn't do was on the flip side of that. Like I said, I was holding it all in. I didn't want to talk to anybody about it. I didn't want to admit that I had a problem. And it really wasn't until when I retired that I realized how big of an issue that it was. Mm. And the reason being was I made being a fireman who I was at my core. Mm. Like I am a first responder. I'm a firefighter. I'm a paramedic. That's me, Kenny Schroeder, and nothing else. And so like I understood the pressures and the stress. Like my wife was telling me, like, you're not the same man you used to be. Like things were just getting to a point, especially after COVID, where we're working a lot of hours, that the stress was just, you know, way up here. And so when I was eligible to retire after 20 years of being with the same department in the Kentucky system, I was like, yeah, maybe that's not a bad idea. And my wife was on board with it. She was like, yep, let's go ahead and do this. And that way, you know, you can go on to the second chapter of life, whatever that looks like for us. So at that point in time, I really didn't know what it was. Like I know, in the state of Kentucky and across the country as a whole, like we are desperately in need of first responders. So I knew, if nothing else, I could get back into the system, you know, and still be able to be a part of this. But what I didn't expect was when September 1st came of last year and I officially retired, like I was cut off from my department, like emails stopped, runs stopped. The connections that I made stopped. Like I was no longer that firefighter paramedic for the city of Independence.
That feels like a big loss to you.
It was. Yeah. And like I said, I made that who I was. So it was huge. Like I lost my purpose. I lost my connection. I fell into depression, a very big depression. I was using alcohol. I was always a social drinker, but I was using alcohol every day just to help numb those feelings. Like I just didn't want those feelings to be there. And so it was just a spiral to a very, very deep, dark place that I wasn't sure what was going to happen. So thank goodness, thank God, I had people around me. I had my wife, I had a good friend, Phil Hall, that I do a lot of this work with. I had a couples counselor. She was like, you need to do something. Like this is not working in your life right now. Like we need to figure this out. So my couples counselor recommended Center of Excellence. And I thought, you know, that was definitely a solution. It was something I could do. But the thing that I didn't like about that option was it was just extended. Like it was at least 30 days of being away, like far away from my family. I have four kids, you know, that I love and, you know, of course my wife and the rest of my family. And so just being away for that long was just something I wasn't interested in, but I knew I started to know that I needed the help. Like multiple people are telling me, hey, you need to do this. You need to get the help. And then it wasn't until October of last year, I went to a firefighter health and wellness conference, the Brothers Helping Brothers Firefighter Wellness Conference, and helped to be a part of that, like just setting up the two brothers that aren't brothers, technically that put that together, Jim and Nick. They said, come on up, you know, you can help us out. You can, you know, work here with us and we'd love to have you. So we went up there, spent the day just helping prep it, set it up, attended the first day. And I was like, this is cool. You know, I hadn't planned on staying for 3 days. It was just, I was going to go for a day and that was it. Well, after the first day, I was like, oh, you know, maybe I should stay. This is a lot of great information. And so day two, the keynote for day two was a guy by the name of Jake from Save a Warrior. If you don't know Jake, if you never met Jake, yep. He's a very passionate man. And so he keynoted us and I was like, holy shit, this guy's telling my story. Like how does he know my life when I've never even met him? And so the whole time I'm thinking, yeah, this is great. Like I need Save a Warrior. But I myself didn't have the courage to speak up when it was time. And thank goodness, that good friend of mine, Phil Hall, was sitting right across the table from me. His back was to me, so I couldn't, you know, really see him, but like I knew he was there. At the very end, Jake had asked, does anybody have any questions or, you know, is anybody going to be in my cohort? So he had two spots in a cohort. That was the following week coming up. And Phil raised his hand. He's like, you going to be in my cohort next week? And Phil was like, maybe. and Jake was like, is there somebody else you think should go? And I'm thinking, damn it, Phil, don't say my name. Don't say my name. And he's like, yeah. He's like, is that guy here? And he said, yep, he's right behind me. I'm like, ah. But at the same time, I was thinking, thank God. Thank God somebody had the courage to stand up for me when I didn't have the courage myself to say something. And so I got rostered to go to Save a Warrior, went the following week. And it's funny that we're talking today because it was actually a year ago today. That was day one for Save a Warrior for me. And that whole event, just life-changing for me in particular and life-saving as well. So just an amazing experience. I'm so grateful for, like I said, the friends and family around me that got me the help I needed, and also the men and women that are behind Save a Warrior that make that possible for first responders and military.
Yeah, I've known quite a few people. Actually, two of the three main characters in my film went to Save a Warrior. Okay. Maddie Fiorenza and Officer Desiree Palmer, they both went to Save a Warrior.
Okay.
And it was transformative for both of them.
Yes.
As well. You said something earlier that really kind of stuck out to me. You said you needed to pretend that these things weren't bothering you. Mm-hmm. That's pretty normal, right, within the first responder community?
Yeah, it is. Like I said, it's just that culture, that stigma of like you have to show up stoic. You can't let anything be seen that shows you are weak. And I mean, it's not just for us, it's for all first responders, I feel like, especially like law enforcement too. There's a whole nother fear for them, I feel like, that we don't have as firefighters. Because if there's any weakness shown for law enforcement, you know, they could take away their weapon, you know, it's a whole nother thing, you know, that we don't have to deal with exactly as firefighters. But yeah, you don't want to show that weakness. I think it's, you know, people fear that maybe they won't be picked for certain roles or they'll just be seen as weak or not be able to handle it. But really, as I have found and others have gotten, like it takes a lot more courage to say, hey, I need help, than it does to sit there and do nothing about it.
Mm-hmm. What would you do differently if you were starting, if you were back to being 20 years old and starting out again, what would you do differently this time?
Knowing what I know now, I mm-hmm. probably would have addressed some things in childhood that I thought were normal, that really weren't normal. It was just normal to me because that's what I knew growing up.
Sure.
So addressing some of that before it became a bigger issue, just because that's kind of the way I showed up in my life, of just, you know, being certain ways and relying on certain things and showing up in that manner. Versus getting the help to understand that, hey, those coping mechanisms maybe aren't the best way to handle things. Like you should do it this way versus that. So that would be probably first and foremost. Secondly, just leaning into like getting healthier, like taking care of yourself. Us in the first responder arena and healthcare, and you know, everybody else that helps people, like we are servant. You know, by nature, like that's what we do. We help others. So when it comes to taking care of ourselves, we don't do a very good job of that. So just keeping that in mind, again, going back to, if you take care of your members, they're going to take care of your community better. So if I take care of myself, I'm going to be better for everybody else that's around me. I'm going to be better suited for the job. You know, it's going to be a healthier career. I'm going to be able to enjoy retirement when I get there, and all of that stuff. So making sure I take care of myself first and foremost, everything else lines up and kind of takes care of itself. I'm just now learning. Like that has just been in this past year of, this is what you need to do. And it's amazing. Like I can say that now, like just looking back over the past year, how different my life is. And it's just being open, being vulnerable and leaning in and doing that work that it takes to get healthy. It's hard work. And I can understand why people don't do it. Like it can be terrifying too, to look really deep inside yourself and look at those pieces that you didn't ever want to look at. And you thought made you weak or, you know, whatever the case may be. Like it's tough to do.
You know, it's the hard things in life that give us the most education, right?
Absolutely.
It's those things that we struggle with that can teach us the most about ourselves, about life, about humanity, you know, about, and then it's the hard, we have to go through the hard things if we want to get better. I mean, it's kind of a cliche, but it's like, you know, it's like a diamond doesn't sparkle unless you have to polish it. You have to take some of it off, take some of it away, you know, for it to really be shiny and bright. Right. And so that's painful.
Yeah. Yeah, it absolutely is. And that's where I found like the biggest growth in anyone is during that struggle. And looking back on my life, I know that everything had to set up that way to get to the point where I am now. And it wasn't the prettiest way. It wasn't happy times all the time, but I had to go through that to get where I am now. And that's the biggest piece I can tell anyone that's struggling is like, you know, it's going to suck. Like it may suck today. It may suck tomorrow, but in the long run, if you just hang with it and work through the growth that happens because of it, like you're going to be in a much better place.
Mm-hmm. How do these things affect family, and what needs to happen to help family members, spouses, kids to deal with some of these things that you experience?
Yeah, that's a tough question. It's a tough solution as well. I think the biggest thing is just communication. And I speak that way because like I wasn't the greatest communicator in my whole career. And especially in my married life, the stuff that I kept inside, like I wasn't sharing that on the job, and I wasn't sharing that when I came home either. I just felt like I was protecting my family by not sharing those things that kind of haunted me or that I struggled with, and they were better off for it. Well, you know, that's not the greatest way to handle things. You can't just say, you know, I'm fine when things aren't fine. They really want to know what you're struggling with. And I don't think we give enough credit to our families about the strength that they have, because they are stronger than we think they are. So just making sure they are aware of the support that is out there for them. One of the cool things I had the opportunity to do this year was to go to a place called Project Sanctuary, an organization that provides family retreats for first responders and military. And just, it was a time to just get away and be with your family and just enjoy that time without anything outside. You know, there wasn't any part of the job. There wasn't any outside stress that we had to worry about. Like they provided your lodging, they provided the meals and everything. And there was an educational component on top of that. So, my spouse and I were getting the education. My two youngest kids were getting a little bit of education and meeting some lifelong friends in the process. So they still talk to the kids that they met, during that retreat. So that was awesome. So just being open to all of those possibilities, making sure you share that with them, because we don't do a very good job of sharing that, like speaking for myself. But we typically don't do a very good job of sharing that. So anything out there, if it's like a spousal peer support as well, I know that's one thing our peer support team has talked about for a while, is providing that resource for spouses and families of just having another connection, another outlet of like-minded people that, you know, if there's an issue that comes up, they have somebody that they can talk to. And not that, you know, maybe they need or they'd be able to get this solution right away, but it's just talking to somebody that may be in the same situation and making it, normalizing it and saying, yeah, like we have to put up with a lot of stuff and, you know, sometimes it sucks. And, you know, this is the stuff that we get when our significant others come home and they have a rough night on shift or whatever the case may be. You know, the thing that as first responders, I never realized was that my wife can have a tough day at home too, you know? And so when I walk in the door, I'm not maybe seeing that. I'm just seeing whatever's on my brain, whatever I experience, not realizing that, hey, you know, things might've been crappy here at home too. And so just having that understanding, knowing that we're a team, knowing that we can help each other out, like it's so big, but communication would be first and foremost, just keeping those lines of communication open and not judging. I know that's hard to do, you know, because I've been guilty many times of judging whatever the situation may be, but just, you know, being empathetic and, you know, meeting them wherever they're at too. That's been the one thing that I have found now that I'm back in the fire service as a paramedic. I tell people all the time, I'm like, I feel like I'm a better paramedic now than I ever have been. And it's certainly not because my skills have gotten any better. You know, as we get older, like it's not as easy to get those IVs or, you know, those airways or whatever the case may be. It's just because I'm more empathetic. Like I see now that any run that we make, it's another human being. And if I show up as a human being, treating them like a human being, it just works so much better. You know, I meet them where they're at and just help them. I'm like, hey, I'm here to help you. It's not about anything else. Like, I don't care what got you to this point. I'm just here to help and listen and do whatever I can to make your life better in this moment. So if we take that back home to our families, you know, it just works wonders as well.
Yeah. Wow. So you ended your first part of your career as a lieutenant. You were a leader in your agency. What would you like other leaders to understand about mental health and wellness?
Just that it's a need. Like, we have to take care of our members and be willing to do whatever is necessary to help them. You know, if that's education, I think that's the first point, is like being educated about what it is that could happen, like what it is they could need, what the resources might be, like just that education. Like if there's one thing you can do, that's it, like to start off. But then being supportive outside of that, like understanding that, again, we are humans and yes, we got to do this job, that we sometimes have to put things aside, you know, put our own feelings and emotions aside to do. But at the end of the day, like, this is going to affect them and you have to be ready to handle that. So having that understanding, that education, that, you know, maybe they don't know what they need, and being kind of that pillar of like, hey, I understand what you're going through. It may suck. I may not be able to identify wholly with it, but these are some things that may help you. And so just being supportive and not like critiquing on maybe they show up late one day because, you know, they overslept, because they didn't sleep the night before, because it's all, you know, on their mind and hitting pretty heavy. So just being understanding that those things may occur, and it might not just be because, you know, they're lazy or whatever you may think it is. It could be something significant like mental health. Being a leader by example also. So like making exercise, making nutrition, making your mental health as a leader be a priority for you, you know, focusing on relationships and building those relationships and just, again, being supported. So if you can do that as a leader by example, it's just going to be a downhill, you know, pass it on to the troops type thing of saying, oh, you know, this is how they're showing up. You know, that's important. I probably need to do that in my own life.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've talked with people around the country. In fact, this past summer, I forget where it was, but we were in an area and I was talking to a firefighter and he said that, yeah, we're just waiting for our chief to retire. So that we can start doing something. So what if someone's like in a position where they know they need to work on this, but upper management isn't really on board? What can they do?
So I've seen like the biggest power in those grassroots moments of like, even though administration is not on board with what you want to do, you can still do some of this work. Like you can still start it. And it can be, you don't have to have the bugles on your collar to kind of be that leader. You can just be one of the men. And again, just show up by example of like, hey, this is what I found. Like I went to this conference or I took this class and it was really helpful for me, and just passing that on to your crew. Some things I love to do that are part of our firehouse culture now where I'm at is like yoga. So bringing in yoga and just saying like, I know, you know, maybe this is something you never thought you would do in your entire life, but like I've tried it and it works for me. So, you know, I just want you to experience, see if you like it. And if it works, then take it. And if it doesn't, just leave it. Like it's not for everybody. So just doing things like that. Again, it could be like sharing a fitness routine that you do. Maybe some other guys may like that. So just being open to sharing that. Cooking, if you're big into eating healthy, again, not everybody's going to like eating fruits and vegetables or, you know, healthy things instead of the pop or the chips or whatever the case may be. But just, again, you know, taking the time to say, hey, this is what I'm doing. You know, maybe it'll work in your life. Like these are the benefits I have found. And just me personally, a coworker of mine and I tried a plant-based diet a couple years ago, and it was his suggestion. I was like, you know, I wasn't used to anything like that ever before. I was like, eating plant-based, it doesn't sound very tasty. But we did the research. We actually did it on shift. There were only two of us at my station. It was the best that I felt in a long, long time, you know? So it was like, this is great. So I took it home and my family got to the point where they were like, Dad, you ever bring another meatless meatball into this house and we're going to kick you out. So I understand, like, it's not for everybody, but I think just being open to trying new things is pretty neat to do. And, you know, you'd be surprised what is out there, you know, that you maybe never thought about that really is beneficial. So just being open to those ideas.
Hmm. Yeah. So there's a lot to think about in all of this. What have you found just in your new career? What's working for you right now to kind of keep you healthy?
Yeah, I'd say there's a lot of things. One being like sticking to a routine, like a routine that I never thought would be a part of my life. So it's waking up every morning and doing some reading, which like reading was something I never really did. But now I just can't get enough books in my life. Like it's every day my wife is saying like, there's another book in the Amazon cart. I'm like, yeah, there's another book in the Amazon cart. Like I just love reading and enjoying new topics that I didn't really know existed before. So doing that, I meditate every morning and every night. Like that was introduced by Sable Warrior. So that they're really big on that. Yoga, like I said, is a big part of my life. Let's see, just taking care of yourself by getting like routine physical checks done, being open to outside of the traditional medical healthcare realm. So I go see a holistic chiropractor now that has been kind of eye-opening for me. And again, something I never really thought that I did. or would do. And then just talking to others, being open to having these conversations. Like I never had some of those really close relationships in my childhood, growing up in my life, even though like the fire service is seen as a brotherhood. Like I just didn't have that. I wasn't sharing those pieces with really anybody else. Now I know that that's important and I do that every day. So I have a list of guys that I talk to and reach out to, and the same with them. Like we just are able to have different conversations of saying like something here is going on that I don't really like, and I just need to get it out there. Like there are individuals that I text and I'll just say venting, and it'll be followed by a line of whatever is going on in my brain right now. And that's all I have to do to get it out and feel better. And I get a reply back that says, got it. And that's it. Like I got it out. It's no longer, you know, in my system, in my body as kind of a stress. And they didn't need to say anything either. They just had to say, you know, got it. I can hold that space for you. So having that in place is huge. Knowing all the resources that are out there, and not being afraid to take, I don't want to say take advantage of, but not being afraid to join those things and be a part of it. Like the Save a Warrior, the Project Sanctuary, you as a person putting stuff out there to make us aware of the issues going on, like just those educational pieces, not being afraid to immerse yourself in those and just become more educated yourself. Like all of that is just critical. And I wish I would have done it sooner in my lifetime. But again, you got to go through some stuff to get to where you're at now.
Sure. You know, this seems to be that it was a real mind shift for you, mm-hmm. you know, from what you had, you know, experience and thought in the past to what you're doing now. I mean, how long of a process was that? Because I know you have all these things and it takes a long time, and all these things add up over the years, and it doesn't just flip overnight, does right. it?
No, it doesn't at all. I would say like 2020, and I know, you know, COVID was big for everybody, but that mm-hmm. was kind of where everything just came to a big, big ball of stress. And mm-hmm. I thought I was dealing with it and I wasn't. And so, you know, starting then is where I began to realize that, hey, maybe there is an issue, probably not dealing with this in the right way. But it took, you know, another 2 years to get to the point where I got the help that I needed. And then now, one full year later, I'm better. You know, I'm on that healing journey, but I'm still nowhere near healed. Like mm-hmm. it's still something I'm going to have to do for the rest of my life. Like I'm going to have to do this work that I'm doing every day. I'm going to still, you know, have to wake up and do things I don't necessarily want to do, but I know that it's needed to keep me healthy and to help me show up in the way that I want to show up for my family, for my coworkers, for the community. So it's, mm-hmm. it is now a lifelong journey. It took me, I would say, 3 years to get here at least. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a part of what I do for the rest of my life. And again, it's
you have to pick your hard, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's hard doing the other and just suffering mm-hmm. through the stuff, and it's hard doing what you're doing now, but you have to pick your heart.
Yeah. And I will say like you just brought up the suffering piece. And like the thing that I go back to is like, I wish we could just tell recruits when they're coming on the job, like watch out for these things. Like we can educate them. But I think sometimes it doesn't land. Like, I don't know how, if I even would have had this stuff on my first day, if it would have landed for me then, mm-hmm. because I got to be done suffering to know that I don't want to be suffering anymore. And I want to live where my life is different and where my life is healthier and where I can wake up every day and just be happy, you know, and just be grateful to be alive and to do the job I get to do and just be surrounded by the people I want to be surrounded by. So,
Yeah, that's, I know just in my own personal journey over the past probably 6 years, I've really had a mind shift myself and just some of the things and how I think and what I do and really developing those practices that get me to a healthier spot. And it's hard. It's hard work. It's, you know, even this morning, you know, getting out of bed and doing a workout, it's not something I wanted to do, but right. I know it's the little things. It's like, Well, I keep seeing these little posts on Instagram and some of the social media that says, you know, if you just do this for the next 60 days, you'll be a different person. Yeah. You know, and that's true. When you just do the little things and you do it consistently and over again, you become a new person in a way. And have you found that to be true in your life?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And, you know, there are certain things that I think, you know, those habits that maybe aren't the best habits. So, you know, just take, for instance, for me, like drinking alcohol, it was a way that I would numb and it would help me, what I thought was help me get to sleep. Well, you can't just take that away. You know, you have to fill it with something else. And so that was the key, like, all right, you know, I'm getting this out of my life. I don't need it. I don't want it. But there's always going to be that temptation to have it or to lean on it because, you know, that's the way I kind of thought my life was. You know, I use that as a crutch at times. So when times get tough, what are you going to go to instead of alcohol or whatever else you're doing? So you have to have something to replace it with. And I think once you start building those things, like even though you don't want to do it, like maybe I didn't have the best night of sleep. You know, I don't want to get up early and work out, you know, or I don't want to get up and meditate. I'd rather sleep. Well, when you're taking the time to do those habits that you don't want to do, that just, it gives you that discipline to just keep doing it. And when you do that for 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, it just builds it as a habit. And then before long, it's just part of your routine, part of who you are, and just helps you really take on the tougher things as well. Like you can say, oh, I didn't want to do this then. I did it anyway. I don't really want to do this thing next, but because I did that first thing, I can do it now. You know, it just helps build that strength to be able to get through more stuff and to really progress your healing journey.
And those little wins motivate you to do it again the next time, right?
Yes, absolutely. Just like making the bed every morning. I know that's been out there for a while. You do one thing first, you know, maybe it's making your bed. Maybe you don't want to have to do that, but that's a win. Like that's an accomplishment, however small it may be in your life. It's an accomplishment and it just helps you build to the next thing. So, you know, maybe next is just going to work, you know, or whatever it may be. Like it just helps you build up to that next win or that next thing in your life that you need to tackle. Mm-hmm.
So if someone's listening to this or watching this and they're kind of where you were 3 years ago or 4 years ago, what's a good first step for them to get to a place where they're healthier?
The first step would just be the awareness internally that, maybe I have a problem and, you know, what do you do next? So finding someone that you can reach out to, and a lot of times it's somebody that has been there your whole life and you just never realized that, you know, they were there. You just never wanted to share. But just being open about what you're going through, definitely as a peer supporter, I recognize that of like, you know, I don't know what's going on in somebody's life right now. Like even today, I don't know what's happening, but if I can just be there to listen and to say, yeah, I mean, that sounds like it sucks. But hey, guess what? Tomorrow's a new day. There's hope out there. We can get you connected to resources to help you and get you better. And so just being aware that, hey, you know, maybe something is going on with me that's bigger than I ever thought it was. And to know that there's resources out there that people really do care. I know, especially like social media and the news today, it's not always the greatest, but really people do care. Like, you know, we are still all humans and just understand that, like there's people out there that are ready to help and take care of you.
Mm-hmm. What are some resources? You mentioned several in our conversation. What are some resources that you would highly recommend to people to look into?
Yeah. So peer support, first and foremost, like I know that's come a long way and a lot of departments are still a long way to go. So just trying to either, if you don't have a peer support team, maybe it's a great place to start. Maybe you start your own in your department. There's resources out there to even do that. Like we are part of a community in this area. It's called the Tri-State Peer Support Team. So there's connections there to where there's a document that shows you exactly what you need to do to start your own team. So doing that, there's resources like pet therapy that I'm a part of where, you know, pets can come to departments and all it is dogs, cats. We even have a giant bunny that shows up, and you can just, like, it's amazing when these animals walk in the door of a firehouse and just, you see the smiles, and, you know, it's just that instant connection, and it just opens up the possibility and the doors to be able to communicate the tougher things, you know, even if that never happens, you still have brightened the day of somebody that's on the job that, you know, we're ready for the next call, whatever it may be, you know, you've just made their day a little bit better. So there's that. There's, of course, like Sable Warrior is out there. There's these small grassroots charities and 501c3 organizations that are just willing to help us. So just being open to that. There's just a lot of resources out there. One thing that I didn't talk about much, but that helped me tremendously was, it's called a stellate ganglion block. So I've had three of those done now, and that just helped kind of take away some of that hypervigilance that I was facing in those moments, and then work really hard on the therapy part, just to try to get through some things that I was stuck on. So just, again, being open to that, you know, just educate yourself, know the resources that are out there and available, and be open to sharing as much as you want to share. Like, I don't want people to just, you know, have to talk about their story all the time if they don't feel comfortable doing it. But there is a lot of healing in being open and sharing some of those vulnerabilities too, because every time you do, you don't realize it at the time, but you could be helping somebody else also, you know, just by being open to saying, hey, you know, I wasn't okay back then. I didn't realize it then, but I know it now. And these are the things that help me.
What would you say to those leaders that are out there that are watching this? What would you say to them to encourage them to move their agency toward to a better place?
Yeah, along the same lines, just educating yourself is key. You know, stop pretending that you don't have a mental health crisis when you really do. Not just mental health, but overall health and wellness. Like, be educated on all the topics that are related to health and wellness for your people. Because if you take care of your people, I promise, like, your people will respond, and they will take care of your department and your community better than you could have ever imagined. So just being educated on that, being open to any changes you might have to change in your department. Like, I know it's going to be tough. Like, some things may be really hard to do, especially when you have to look internally at yourself. But again, I promise you, it is worth it. Like, just being open to that education, those opportunities, those areas of change, it's going to be worth it in the end. Your people are going to respect you more. I promise. They're going to respect you more by being open and wanting to get them the help.
Awesome. Well, Kenny, thank you so much for sharing your story today and for sharing your insights and wisdom into this whole issue of mental health and wellness. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Conrad. I appreciate what you do for bringing this to everybody out there listening. That, like I said, that's the key, is just educating and getting the word out there for what we do and what the kind of things that we face and ways that we can be healthier. So thank you 1,000 times for what you're doing for us.
Hey, thanks for spending time with me today on the podcast. And I thank all of you who have taken time to leave a review. I really appreciate that. And please remember, you are not alone. And if you need someone to talk to and don't know where you can turn, dial 988 for help. Until next time, be well, take care of yourself and those around you, and go out and do something great in the world.